on the internet where somebody, you know, just gets to a couple key servers and basically shuts down the entire internet for an unknown amount of time.
Oh, no, I broke the internet. No, I don't think so.
Kind of unlikely, too much redundancy simply because... Oh, go ahead.
I mean, is there too much redundancy in the system where...
Way the hell too much money involved for these people not to have everything backed up in multiple locations with their own generators and bunkers underground. Seriously, if we got into, you know, if the Soviet Union was still around and we got into it hardcore with them and nuked everything on the planet and the only thing left alive were cockroaches, that data would still be secure. Kind of scary, isn't it?
Okay, I was just kind of curious about something like that when the...
That stuff
something
is better
that people worried about.
Because of the money involved, and you know, there's a reason that these institutions can afford these, you know, giant high-rise buildings and the most expensive real estate on the planet. But it's kind of sad because the sheer amount of money involved, this stuff is better protected than, you know, the Smithsonian, any modern art museum you care to think of. It's more redundant, more backed up, more permanent than
probably
about all of our, any cultural artifact you could care to name.
Right, you destroy the Mona Lisa and the world still runs. Okay, I was just curious about that.
Do some searches if you want. I can't remember any URLs in particular, but you can dig up some fascinating information on the amount of redundancy and how well protected the data centers are that keep these records, and it's pretty interesting. The military has picked up some tips from the financial institutions as far as, you know, hey, okay, let's protect our stuff just in case, make it secure. Next. Bueller. Hi, Bob. Okay. Well, he was just waving hi. Yes, there'll be a lot of dead air to edit out of this one.
Who do we flog for not having coffee here this morning?
Good
James
question.
Dean has traditionally brought it the last couple of years, so we'll blame him, lack of anyone else to blame. Anyone know where he is? Let's call him and wake him up. I don't know. That's what I was wondering. Saw his wife here. I'm kind of surprised. I thought after Freaknik 4, she would never come to another convention of any sort ever again. For those of you who weren't at Freaknik 4 last year, James Dean and his wife and their very young child accidentally got the room across from the Moloch suite. Bunch of folks from New York who are legendary for throwing really big parties at conventions. So James' wife is trying to sleep, and there are about 200-300 very loud, very drunken people wandering in and out of the Moloch suites getting free, extremely strong punch of some sort that you could probably remove paint with. And there were several stereo wars going on that floor where people were trying to outdo each other with their stereo systems. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Sounds like last Atlanta Con where the hotel stuck us next to the Senior Citizen Christian Pilgrimage Group.
Is that Atlanta Con too?
The last Atlanta Con, yes.
Yeah, so I don't remember seeing those folks.
Well, when...
I wasn't even hallucinating.
I think it was Tommy, someone with red hair.
Tommy Pickles, okay.
Yeah. They were setting up stereos and testing it out, yeah. And then turns out we're next to an entire section of
those guys, yeah.
I found out they were Christians because I think Ilanka, Laughing Boy, and I were eating breakfast. And it turns out they were all Christians, and half of us were wearing pagan gear. Definition of irony. Like, you seem like nice folks.
Couple of comments on that. AtlantaCon 1 was really fun. We had the hotel with the swingers convention.
Yes.
There were some let's just say Hug Me had a lot of older women hitting on him that night.
Different usual how?
Well, they scared him. That was a first, I think. The other one, what was the other comment I was going to make? I should have asked these guys how they did this, but then again, maybe I didn't want to know the details. You know, the folks who were outside yesterday with the Jesus loves you signs, protesting whatever they were protesting. There were a group of very drunk guys on the third or fourth floor balcony of the Hyatt last night wearing togas and with their faces all painted up who were probably not hardcore Christians who had one of these signs. And I don't know how they got the sign, but they had altered it to say, Jeebus loves you. So they were screaming at everyone for about an hour going, Jeebus loves you, Jeebus, Jeebus. Oh, do tell, please.
Not much of a story at all.
I thought about going up because I was still wearing the minister shirt and collar and, you know, preaching from on high, but I had a bunch of stuff with me.
It wasn't really much of a story to tell other than the fact that one of the guys just basically sat down and listened to the Jesus Loves You guys for about half an hour in a drunken stupor state, just going, nodding.
That would work.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, basically, from what I understand, sounding like a stoner. But you just sat there for a half an hour, and then they gave it to him. And then
maybe they thought they converted him because they'd never been around anyone stoned or drunk before.
Yay, programming.
I was hoping it would be something more interesting, like someone got fed up and they mugged him or something.
Give me the sign and no one gets hurt.
Yeah, there you go. Gotta remember that
Satan
one.
Wants your sign.
Hey, that could be an idea for a prank panel next year. Wow. We could have a religious protest against Dragon Con. Invent our own. We could plan during the prank panel. We could plan our religion out. Figure what we're for, what we're against. Come up with some flyers, and then protest Dragon Con. Or maybe we could just pick on. What's the most annoying track of programming here?
Oh.
Yeah,
Fern.
Who? What? We will absolve you from all responsibility. In fact, we'll tell you when specifically we're going to plan this unofficially so you can't be around. Plausible deniability. We can edit this later, right? No, we'll clear it with you. We don't want to get anyone in trouble or anything because one of the main definitions of a prank, MIT-style prank anyway, is it should be funny, educational if possible, and do absolutely no damage or harm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the guys, Billboard Liberation Front and some of the other groups like that, when they do their modifications to the billboards, they'll leave instructions up on the billboards for the people who have to come up and fix them, going, here's how to remove everything we've put up without causing any damage to the original sign, and they'll either leave a 6 or a 12 pack of some really good beer up there, or $20, and then, on the bottom of the note says, here, go out and buy yourself some beer for your trouble and effort. Yeah.
Actually, two better religious stories is, I'm Jewish, and we've gone down to South Georgia with one of the eye care clinics. People have asked me to bend down so they can find my horns. This has happened more than once to me and my friends. They want to find my horns. I'm not kidding.
Kind of scary.
Second story is I went to an Orthodox high school, and about 10 years ago, they walked into the school and scrawled across the walls were, on April 7th, you are all going to die. Now, the funny thing was that April 7th was during Passover when we have spring break. So the police sat there, waited for April 7th. The two teenagers walked in and got arrested.
I could have made such a great birthday party out of that. It's my birthday.
Actually, my gift for leaving was going to be to leave a burning cross, but I never got to it.
Hmm. So the filking track, eh? Who else is annoying? I personally like to pick on the vampire players. They're really fun to mess with.
They love the attention.
I don't. I used to dress up a lot more for Dragon Con the first couple of years I was here. Do the hair green and be wearing really freaky clothes. And that was about the height of the vampire stuff. This was before Pokemon, I think. And people just automatically assumed I was in a game somewhere. I was, you know, I was LARPing. It was like, no, fuck off, you know. And I finally went out for the third year I was here. I think this was Dragon Con. Yeah, this was 98 or 99. I went out and just got a cheap gray T-shirt from Walmart and scrawled across it in giant angry black letters, "No, I am not a fucking vampire player." And was it 99?
Yeah.
Okay. Wore that around. Decided I would test it out a couple of high-profile places. I went like to the Poppy Z Bright reading when she was here. And actually got there a little bit late and walked into the little reading room and opened the door. And it was like this sea of black. Yeah, everyone wearing black there in the entire room. And Storm Constantine was reading something. I walk in, and, of course, people kind of glance around. And then all these people start doing this big double take and reading my shirt. And I got some of the vilest looks you've ever seen in your life. And it didn't help that because of the commotion, Storm Constantine stopped reading for a second, and she and Poppy Z Bright and some guy who was in drag up there with them were squinting, and they just started cracking up. Went up and talked to her afterwards, and she said, "You know, some people take this a little bit too seriously. I like your shirt." And so after that, of course, I decided I had to go by the White Wolf booth.
And I have to know, did it have any religions or associated religions you could ordain yourself in?
Do I have any with me right now?
No, I mean the vampire thing that you just were talking about.
I'm confused.
No, what I mean is, did they have some sort of priest category within the within all these vampire people that you saw?
Just generic Christianity.
No, I don't play this game.
All right. Yeah. Figured someone might have brought to your attention.
Yeah, we were thinking some other things too, little garlic cloves and throwing garlic cloves at them and stuff like that. You know, I went to the White Wolf booth, and they loved it too. In fact, they gave me a pass to their private party out at the masquerade, and it's like, yeah, we just sell the stuff. We think the people who play it are idiots, which is, that's a quote. I love it. But I decided that I wasn't really going to go to the masquerade party because, you know, what if I'd really secretly offended them and they were going to have a human sacrifice that night? Who would be better? You know, the blasphemer. So paranoia took over. Some people gave me stickers worth goth points, too, whatever those are. I got 20 of them. So.
Is that like Marlboro Miles?
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I've come to understand that. So, okay, Filkers, vampire players. No.
It involved dragon hatching, mating rituals, and flight and etiquette. Now, let me see what else.
Beautiful.
It was
Pern is pornography. That's all it is in disguise. It's pornography. They are detailing sex, and they are selling it to our children.
Let me see this. It is obscene. Dragon healing, clan.
He's had a lot of practice.
Whirling training.
Well, my show was the radio show I did up in Nashville was let me see if I remember the spiel. I can't remember specific parts. I got to do the whole thing from the beginning. Give me a second here. It's been a couple weeks. Good morning, Nashville. Once again, this is your beloved Pope Johnny X, and it's time, folks. It's time to turn lay the hell up, wake your parents, and disturb the neighbors. It is time for 91 Noise, an eclectic collection of all audio's cacophonous collage of mayhem in the AMRs and still Middle Tennessee's only electronic apocalyptic church of the last days rock and roll variety extravaganza and traveling snake oil show, where we do indeed, folks, absolutely, positively, and un-goddamn-ditionally guarantee at least one explosion per hour or kill me. Cue nuclear explosion. Wait about 30 seconds for it to die down. We're playing Art of Noise in the background. Peter Gunn theme on 45, by the way. Explosion dies down and go. Just goes on and on and on. Folks, it's a beautiful thing. If you've got anything beautiful to say, any comments, criticisms, requests, death threats, call the heck on in. Lines are open at 322-ROCK and or 421-ROCK. ROCK is still 7625 in case you happen to be temporarily illiterate at the moment. Remember, if you're calling from a rotary phone, it's... or something like that. Got it good, and then something about whatever music I'm starting off with. So, Pirate radio has been the theme recently. FCC has been kind of cracking down, not due to stations playing, you know, obscenities on the air, but objectionable themes in songs. This has been something that's happened to college radio stations within the last few months, and what they're doing is songs that are seem to be pro-feminist, radical liberal, stuff like that. They've started finding radio stations for playing some of this stuff. I'm trying to think of some of the artists involved. Young guy Einman, something like that. And there was a, yeah, there was a Rage Against the Machine song. There was a female hip-hop artist with an anti-rape song. Station in St. Louis got fined $10,000 because of suggestive sexual content. Yeah.
Maybe I missed some of it. Why do they have a problem with feminists and
liberal? Let me tell you exactly what's going on here. It's become kind of apparent that the crackdown, as I said, is aimed primarily at college radio stations playing songs that could be considered leftist. And the reason for this is we have a new very conservative chairman of the FCC, whose last name happens to be Powell. And the current administration owes a lot of favors to the religious right. And the religious right has traditionally had problems with college radio stations, mine included. For a while, we had a local fundamentalist church monitoring WRVU 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for anything that they objected to, and then the whole congregation would write complaint letters to the FCC. Now, I had a lot of fun with this because I could go in, and this was earlier on when I would do six-hour shows, in the wee hours of the morning. I knew some little old guy or little old lady was listening to this thing Saturday night, and they would have to go into church Sunday morning. So I would do 6 hours of nonstop Japanese noise bands. No lyrics, feedback, screaming, explosions, you know, distorted guitars. And the only thing I would say is at the top of every hour, you're listening to WRVU Nashville, 91.1 FM, legal station ID. That's all you got to say between midnight and 6 a.m. And music never stopped, and, you know, I knew these people had to listen to it. They just had to listen to it. Warmed my little heart. But there are several reasons they're cracking down. The college radio stations don't like, I mean, the conservative churches don't like the college radio stations playing that devil music. Literally, that's, you know, how I feel about it. I'm not exaggerating at all. And if they target the smaller stations, college radio stations that have very little budget, the non-commercial stations, $10,000 can be the entire operating budget for a student radio station for a year. And you either have to really clean up and crack down on your programming and become more mainstream, or your station might be off the air for 6 months. And this benefits the large radio stations, the commercial stations, which are pretty much you know, chains nowadays. And if you can shut down the indie college radio stations, those listeners are going to go to the commercial radio stations, and you can jack up your advertising rates because you've got more people listening now. Several different reasons. You, and then you.
Thanks. There's a local college station, WREK here in Atlanta.
It's, yeah, Georgia Tech radio station.
Yeah. Georgia Tech's focus, registered with the FCC, is non-standard, non-mainstream music. It's in their charter. They cannot play the popular music. They cannot play the older popular hits. They basically can't touch anything mainstream. And how do you think that would, you know, the more conservative view would affect them, considering that it's in their charter? The rock and the hard place is coming up. You know, it's just like they have no room. And there's a lot of stations like that here in Atlanta. There's, I think it's WGSU. I'm not sure what Georgia State's radio station is.
88.5 WRAS, 100,000 watts, most powerful student-run radio station in North America, and goddammit, I'm going to have a place on that station in the spring.
Good for you. WRFG, Free Radio Georgia, out of Little Five, WRAS, WREK, you know, there's a couple of the bigger stations here all stationed in Atlanta or in the area.
What will happen is, I'll tell you what happened with WRVU. I can't speak for the other stations, but I don't like the management at WRVU this year. Vanderbilt has more than their fair share of, you know, spoiled rich kids, and unfortunately we've got several with that mentality who are running WRVU this year, which is a reason why I'm glad I'm moving on, because they probably would have shit-canned me this semester anyway. But they just went through and pulled all the CDs by the controversial artists out of the stacks. And we got an email that went around our list, and this pissed me off too. And they said, we just need to lay low. We don't need to talk about this at all. We just need to be very quiet and wait for it to blow over and blah, 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 blah. And my response was, yeah, okay, what the hell is wrong with you people? One, we've got a 40,000 watt, I mean, we've got a 10,000 watt transmitter that covers 60,000 square miles of Middle Tennessee. We should be announcing this every hour on the hour with our station IDs. If we get fined, we have a couple extra benefits this year. Two, we've got, you know, Vanderbilt's First Amendment Freedom Forum Center right on campus, and we have supposedly one of the best law schools in the South. Let's use this stuff, okay? I mean, there's no reason to back down for this stuff. You keep it quiet. You play exactly into their hands. You know, let's make a big point, too, of going through and let's start playing every hour all the songs the commercial radio stations play that they don't get in trouble over, like The Who's Who Are You, which is a good song. I like The Who, by the way. But I kind of get pissed off that any dinosaur rock commercial top 40 station can play this, and they say quite audibly in the lyrics twice, who the fuck are you? Pink Floyd's Money, I think. One of the songs off Dark Side of the Moon, I think it's Money, and they say shit quite audibly. There are several other songs like this that are pretty much untouchable as far as commercial top 40 dinosaur rock stations go. And, all right, if these big stations with presumably bigger audiences can play them, and they're part of a network, and this stuff is part of the playlist, and it's being played all over the country, let's go ahead and start playing it on some of the commercial, I mean, the non-commercial stations, explain why we're playing this, use the transmitters, get the word out, you know. The best way to play into the hands of the censors is to be quiet and not say anything.
Actually, I've seen a proliferation of too large of a word for this time of morning.
Yeah, we understand the whereabout.
Internet radio stations. I have a friend of mine that runs VampireRadio.com, which is gothic, industrial, and if you walk into his apartment, it looks like you've just walked into a radio studio, except for the fact he's got two servers, one broadcasting broadband and one broadcasting 56K across the internet, and it sounds like a radio station, it behaves like a radio station, and he's got, like, you know, 50,000 listeners from one end of the United States to the other.
Has he gotten a license from the RIAA?
You don't need to.
Are you sure about that? Because I know people who've been shut down because there's no way to collect royalties on this stuff.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Live 365 pretty much lets anybody set up a station. You basically upload some songs to one of their servers if you're low key, and they'll play them over.
He owns every CD.
We have
everything that he plays.
WRVU. Yeah. At WRVU, we had to get a license with RIAA to stream our radio station out over the net as well. If you go to the WRAS homepage, www.wras.org, which is the station here,
they say
specifically they cannot stream their content online.
Well, I do know that there is one license that he did get, but it's not a cheap license. I mean, it's a very cheap, very inexpensive license, and you know he doesn't pay any more, you know, anything other than that.
Get with me after the panel. I want to find out exactly what he's doing, because I thought that my understanding was about a year and a half ago, the RIAA, working with BMI and the other royalty places, had put in kind of ridiculous licensing scheme that would get rid of most of the streamers, simply because, again, they took listeners away from the commercial radio stations, mm-hmm. and therefore they couldn't, you know, support their ad rates.
Well, he explained that license isn't necessary. It's not, you know, you're not going to end up in court over not having a license or anything like that. It's just whatever. If you get something, just get it because I do have that, by the way, just in case someone decides to give you any problem about it.
The license is necessary simply because you are streaming copyrighted content that you don't own. It is necessary, but they probably just haven't paid any attention to them yet. But still, yeah, talk to me after the panel. I'll find out more about that.
Either that, it's an unfounded hypothesis, but maybe the restriction only applies to already licensed radio stations and the ordinary broadcast. I could be wrong, but
it's copyrighted material, and the broadcast rights are held by the copyright holders, which is the major labels, and they're bastards. You know, any way they can get money out of you broadcasting this stuff, they're going to require a license. Yeah, go ahead.
If you look on Live 365, it gives you guidelines when you're setting up your stream, and mm-hmm. some of the guidelines are you can't introduce any song before it's played.
And you can't repeat the content, I think.
Yeah, the loop has to be so many hours long. Mm-hmm. You can't play two songs by the same artist back to back.
Yeah, and I think it's like once every 3 hours you can't play the same song, or I don't even know if it applies to the same artist. It might.
Yeah, I don't know what regulation. I think it has to do with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Is it live365.com? Yeah, all right, cool. I'll check that out. I haven't gotten into it simply because I'm on cable modem and yeah, can't stream. I had the radio station, so yeah, I didn't really have any need to stream.
The radio station that my friend runs is run predominantly off of request, where you can, when you go to his webpage, you can go to the entire song listing and click on the song you want to hear. And it queues it up in the server for later play. And I've played, like, you know, gone in and just, like, requested two songs by the same artist and, you know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's totally listener-driven radio station, except for when he comes on and does his bits.
How much you want to bet that once we get to the point where it's easy for people to tune into this stuff with a small, inexpensive, portable device, they're going to start cracking down on it more. I'll tell you why they want to regulate this stuff. This kind of pissed me off, and this was pretty much the first step into me dropping a broadcast journalism major about 12 hours before I completed it. I mean, I could have completed that degree and then still never have done anything with broadcast journalism, and I would be in a better place financially and in the job market simply because I had a degree completed. Isn't that weird? Anyway, went into my radio class, and the very first day the professor says in the class, if you're here because you want to play good, new, cutting-edge music and you know, blah, 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 expose people to new music and new whatever, you're in the wrong place. You know, go somewhere else and join a community radio station. Commercial radio station is all about attracting a target demographic so you can sell advertises specifically to that demographic, and the content used to attract your audience is unimportant. It doesn't matter what kind of music it is. It doesn't matter if it's news or talk radio. It's meaningless. You don't care. You want that target demographic so you can sell advertising to them, and that's what commercial radio is all about. I'm kind of sitting here going, maybe that's why commercial radio sucks for the most part, you know? So, anyway, that's why I've always worked at the college radio stations, and I don't get paid. It's all volunteer stuff. I do it because I can do whatever the hell I like, and it's fun.
Actually, there was a station called WGKA. It was owned by our friend. He bought it. He did every single program, played whatever the hell he pleased, and no one bothered him at all. It was kind of like community radio station. He got nostalgic for, I guess, college in his 50s, bought a radio station, and played wherever the hell he pleased.
Must be rich, eh?
Yeah.
See, that's the problem. Even the AM stations now, Spectrum Space is so crowded, and you've got the media monopolies wanting to buy up and saturate everything. Even low-power AM stations are typically running for like six figures for the licensing fees, and it'll take years going through the FCC paperwork. If you want a FM station in a good area, I mean, you know, damn, millions, if not tens of millions of dollars. And this is why we were so excited about low-power community FM radio for a while before the National Association of Broadcasters basically lied to Congress and fucked that all up.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to make the low-power FM panel this afternoon, but I got handouts. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know that I'll really be able to speak at length, son. I was going to let you sort of set the pace and just sort of sit here and nod my head in agreement. I was a low-power FM applicant about a year ago, and suffice it to say, it was killed with the stroke of a pen late last year, and I've just been sort of trying to put it out of my mind. It really doesn't sit very well with me right now. It kind of upsets me that...
www.hobbybroadcasting.com. It's a website, and Andrew Yoder puts out a real good magazine that's associated with that website. Lots of how-to material, equipment reviews, stuff like that. Not that we would suggest or advocate setting up your own pirate radio station at all.
I would do it, except that the FCC's field office here in Atlanta is about 5 miles from my house.
That just makes it more interesting. Let me tell you how you do it. This is how the Europirates have been doing it. Basically, you get you pre-record your show on tape and get a cheap in-dash cassette player. It's rugged. It's sturdy. You knock it around. And wire antenna, low-power transmitter from a good site that will give you some coverage, and you set the equipment up, get up to a timer, and let it go and just leave the area. It turns itself off when it's done. Go back, scout around the area if anyone's hanging out there, if they've located where the transmitter it is. You just abandon the equipment. You probably haven't lost more than $100 worth of stuff. Otherwise, you'd pick it up again. That's how a lot of the Euro pirates do it. I'm not sure who was first. One of you guys. Slug it out. Fight.
We've got the portable CD MP3 players now, which can extend that out to 10 hours now, and they're running under $100 now.
Ah, cool. Yeah, as the technology gets cheaper and cheaper, it'll be easier to do this kind of stuff. Something else, an interesting experience I had at RVU, foreign exchange students, it's always fun. And there was this real cute Italian girl I tried to date for months at the radio station. And needless to say, I spent a lot of time talking with her. And she was rather amazed and horrified at how restrictive radio was in the United States. And I said, well, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Well, apparently over in Italy, which, if you remember, was a fascist dictatorship not too long ago, they decided back in 1970 that their version of the First Amendment applied to broadcast media as well. So you can go out to a local Italian radio shack, pick up a transmitter, and be on the air that night, as long as you're not causing any interference to anybody else. That 24-hour Hare Krishna chants, just a couple notches up the dial from the voice of the Vatican,
That could be interesting.
You can even pick up TV. Yeah, seriously, if you got the cash, you can go out and you can buy a TV transmitter and broadcast whatever the hell you want, as long as you're not interfering. They've got some guidelines to help you out. And, this is nude game shows, weird stuff like this. This is the country where the Pope lives. If they can do that stuff over there, why can't we do it here? You can't say fuck
corporate
on the radio.
Greed.
You can't say fuck the government, or fuck the corporations.
Well, I just want to make a comment on the pirate radio. Back in the late 70s, a friend of mine and I set up one in East Texas. And what we did, we used sideband CB. And we took a bunch of walkie-talkies, set them up to transmit and receive, used them as repeaters.
Ooh.
Epoxied them on the back of buses all over town. Our transmitter was in a truck. We just set up wherever we wanted to. We transmit for a while. It was repeating from all over town. They could never locate the signal.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah.
We had a pirate radio station running in Gainesville, WRAG for Radio Alternative Gainesville. Get on the rag. 2 watts of raw power coming at you from the bottom of the FM barrel. We were on 87.9, 87.5, whatever the lowest FM was. We moved the transmitter every night, and the semester after I left, they boosted it up to 10 watts so they could actually cover the county, and they attracted the attention of the FCC. They also didn't move the transmitter for 3 months. Morons.
If you can't see us with binoculars, you're not in range.
You'd actually be surprised what kind of coverage 10 watts can do.
Oh, yeah.
You live in a good geographical location where you can get that transmitter way up there, man. You can get a lot further than the rated coverage area of 10 watts.
Yeah, you'd be surprised at what 40 to 50 to 60 watts roughly can do to a 40,000-watt radio station if you're close enough to their antenna and don't know that you're actually broadcasting, you know, at that much power, Atlanticon 1.
Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm a little bit of practicality, but what about setting up a low-power radio station for DragonCon, have announcements or whatever?
Mm. Yeah, we've talked about that. We have to be careful because, you know, FCC field office is not too far away, but it would be fun.
All right, actually, it's in Duluth.
It's a practicality problem.
It's in Duluth. I know I went knocking on their door last year. We were going to have one of the FCC agents up here, hopefully, and I went and knocked on their door, and they were rather suspicious of us because they are strictly
us?
They're strictly a, well, the entire convention, I guess, is they're strictly, he said, a an enforcement office. They used to be a full office, and now all they do is enforcement. And he said, we've shut down quite a few pirate radio stations here in the South, and he's like, I'm not sure that we would be extremely popular on your panel. So they bowed out.
Tell them we can give them like the Blues Brothers treatment. We'll just string some chicken wire up in front of them beforehand. Yeah, give them a little brush so they can brush the glass off of them when the panel's done.
Yep.
Rich. Matt.
I suspect they were there at the panel. I don't know. Maybe somebody's even here at this panel, but I would assume we raised their eyebrows enough that they wanted
to. Hacking 101, we should probably remember next year to explain the concept behind Spot the Fed.
Yeah.
What do you think about the satellite radio that's supposed to be coming out shortly?
Let's see how much lower we can move the bar. Let's really pander to everyone. I don't know. Maybe if they have enough channels, some mutant weirdo like one of us will get in there and do a decent show or something.
Well, tie that to the amateur rocketry and trying to put a satellite up.
Yeah, that's get something into a into. To do a suborbital isn't that difficult. To get something into orbit and then maintain that orbit is a little bit more difficult.
I'm all about the homebrew anarchy. Let's have our own satellite in orbit and do our own satellite radio thing. But I would want to make sure that the people who were doing this actually had a clue and didn't put it into an orbit that would be dangerous or bad for anything else because bad publicity is not. Even more bad publicity is not what you need if you're doing something like that.
There we go. For fun and profit. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, speaking of rocketry, model rocketry, amateur rocketry, has anybody heard about that guy who's building his own hydrogen peroxide-powered rocket, and he's going to launch himself middle of next year on a suborbital? He's the designer of it. He's the pilot of it. He's mission control. It is gorgeous.
This is a wonderful thing. It's win-win no matter what happens. Either he's going to go up and it's going to be really spectacular and he'll get a lot of press and he'll get a lot of attention, or he's going to be the best damn Darwin Award next year. I can't wait to see what happens.
That rocket is gorgeous looking, though. I mean, he's a toy designer, of all things. And he's just been fascinated with rockets all his life. And he said by the time all is said and done, he'll have spent about $500,000. But he's doing this completely privately funded. He's built a centrifuge in his backyard for him to spin around and ride on and make sure he can withstand the G's from this thing. But one of the things about hydrogen peroxide as a rocket propellant that's nice is there's no actual flame. Okay, so there's really not a risk boom, the thing exploding. Basically, they take it's not the stuff you buy at the drugstore. It's a stronger concentration of hydrogen peroxide. It's like 90% versus what you get. It's very nasty. But it's
Ms. Marvel. Has anyone seen her around recently? Just a thought. Sorry.
But the interesting thing is, apparently, if you blow, if you push hydrogen peroxide of that strong of a concentration past a catalyst made of silver, it actually reacts with the hydrogen peroxide, creates steam, and this steam becomes thrust. Now, why isn't NASA using this if it doesn't produce a flame and it's much safer? Well, the problem is you only get about half the thrust out of a hydrogen peroxide rocket as you would out of a conventional rocket. But if all you're talking about is doing a suborbital, you know, just going up into space and falling back down, it's fine for that. And really, really minimizes the parts count and assembly process and overall cost quite a bit. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens.
NASA doesn't use it because, one, it's cheap, intelligent, and would actually get us off this planet. And therefore, resource shortage would no longer be an issue when it comes to, you know, government.
Really, I guess if you think about it, you know, if you only have half the thrust, okay, build a rocket twice as large to compensate for it.
But you can also use booster stages as well. You can you can go to using the solid fuel once
right.
you get to suborbital. So
it'll be interesting to see what happens.
We should just have a space elevator.
Yes, the wire.
There you go. Nanotech 2, that would be fun. All you need is just one assembler. After that, it's easy.
Just beam me up.
I had a question. Half an hour of sleep in 2 days. Come on.
Yeah, I feel for you.
He's doing better than I am.
Next.
And Bueller.
Okay. Completely changing the topic.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
We had a topic?
Yeah, apparently it was rockets.
Where's the coffee?
James Dean didn't show up, the bastard.
Yeah.
He's coffee. Working on his robot.
So sad.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Oh.
You should see this thing. It's pretty cool. It has a chainsaw sticking out the front of it.
Yeah. When is he going to be on?
Well, he swapped with us for 2:30 because that's when Robot Wars is going on. I think it starts at 11, in theory. Robot Wars never starts on time. It's always like Kelly up there bantering back and forth for about a half hour, flirting with the women in the audience before they get underway.
Who needs to get out here for Robot Wars? Mark Pauline and Survival Research Lab.
Yes.
I would like to have them just show up unannounced 1 year and have one of their devices eat all the other robots.
Okay, I'm completely clueless.
I saw the Austin show.
Oh. I could see them bringing in this autonomous humanoid robot that just walks out there and picks up the other robots and crushes them.
Okay, completely clueless here. Who are these people that you just mentioned?
Let me rant about this. Pauline is one of my personal heroes.
Story time, Uncle Johnny.
Do you have any tapes with you?
I didn't bring any tapes with me. I'll bring them next year. We got that
SRL.org, isn't it?
Someone else do the computer while I explain Pauline. He was an art student at the University of Florida in Tallahassee, and he went around and he did billboard modifications quite illegally and would document it. And he wanted for his senior thesis to go through and do a very high-profile billboard and document the process from beginning to end, and his professor told him, well, it's a very interesting idea, but there's no way in hell we're going to approve this project. So he dropped out, basically. One of the more interesting ones he did was, this wasn't exactly a billboard, but he got a big picture, like a couple feet on each side of two cats humping. And the caption on it was something like, during intercourse, the male bites the female on the back of the neck. And so it was some science book or behavior studies book or something like that, and he puts a caption on the bottom of it that says, if you remove this sign, must stay up for 72 hours. If it is removed prior to that point, very bad things would happen. And he would put these signs like on windows of large banks and other places like that, just to see what exactly they would do. Social terrorism, basically. And all of them pretty much would leave the signs up out of sheer terror and like hire a lot of extra guards. And I think only one bank didn't do this, and they took the sign down early. So he went through the
walked through the drive-through thing one night wearing a ski mask and poured a bunch of nitric acid in the deposit chute. And but anyway, after he got out of Florida, he went to San Francisco, and he'd taken a lot of mechanical engineering and hydraulics classes and stuff, and he just started building these really freaking weird devices. One of his first ever performance was a fundraiser for Jello Biafra when he was running for mayor of San Francisco in 1979. And he had this big mechanical conveyor belt contraction that had pictures of all the other candidates on it. And that it would they would roll by on the conveyor belt, and this knife would come down and stab the pictures. And then another section would squirt oil onto it, and then the third section would ignite it and set them on fire. And there was a mummified cat over in one corner that was holding cymbals, that was crashing cymbals together. And there was another device that it was a guitar that had been pulled apart and was just spewing feedback out. And they set this thing up in the parking lot of a gas station at some big intersection one morning. Didn't ask permission or anything. They just showed up with a truckload of stuff before the place opened up and set up and were doing all this stuff and pulling people by and raising money for Jell-O. And then the gas station attendant shows up to open the place up and is freaking out because he doesn't know what the hell. Big muffin. Coffee would be good, too. Coffee? Coffee? Oh, well. Oh, well. You could have soaked it in coffee. I would have squeezed it. But anyway, the gas station attendant shows up and is totally freaking out and doesn't know what's going on because there's 200 lunatics here in the parking lot and weird shit's going on. And he's like, I think I'd better call my boss. Maybe I should call the cops. And they're like, no, it's cool. It's for a good cause. It's a fundraiser. It's for a good cause. Just hang on. Enjoy the show. We'll be gone in about 10 minutes. And they got the thing on tape, and the last thing you see on this segment of the tape is they've tossed all the equipment in the back of the truck, and they're driving off, and there's this little confused-looking guy in overalls standing in front of the gas station just kind of looking around like, what the hell just happened? Well, as time goes on, Pauline's shows get bigger and more elaborate. Pauline and his group actually came up with one of my favorite words ever, obtainium. And obtainium is that which can be obtained. And, yeah, think about the implications there. So you need to obtain something for some purpose, so you go out and you obtain it. You know, no one gives it to you. It's not volunteered. It's not donated. You obtain your necessary resources.
I want a suit of obtainium armor.
So as the shows get bigger and more elaborate, let's remember what happened in the mid to late 80s. You know, the Soviet Union collapses, the Iron Curtain goes down, military starts downsizing a bit. A lot of stuff begins to get declassified, and Pauline realizes, I have a lot of fans I didn't know about in the military, because they start sending him declassified documents saying, this would be really cool for your show. And stuff like, there's going to be a very large military surplus auction at this location on this date, and here's the lot you'd probably be interested in bidding on. Which is why the current shows have things like F-117A pulse jet engines, rocket launchers, all sorts of really cool stuff that our tax dollars paid for.
And Uncle Sam is now liquidating at pennies on the dollar.
So anyway, Pauline unfortunately is banned from ever doing anything in or around San Francisco ever again, or they will put him under the jail, and they have told him this on several occasions. So they travel a lot now.
When was their last show?
I don't know. I have to check the website. They said as long as you can find someone insane enough to insure them that they will travel. Let me tell you how difficult it is to get a Pauline show set up here. Anyone here familiar with the Knob Hill gun shootout in Kentucky? Oh, this is a fun event. Knob Hill, Kentucky. It's basically a weekend-long event where every lunatic in the South who's got a machine gun shows up and shoots stuff. That's all they do. Rednecks with machine guns shooting things. And they have a big range here. They've got cars. They've got tanks. And some people show up with tanks to shoot at other tanks. It's really cool. And Pauline and... Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the more bang for your buck. There you go. Pauline found out about this and contacted the organizers and said, "Yeah, here's who I am. Here's some tapes. Here's what I do. We'd like to do a show in conjunction with you guys." So you think SRL, giant, scary, robotic, weird devices, sometimes incorporating dead animal parts, destroying each other as violently as possible, and machine gun-toting lunatics who are drunk and stoned out of their skulls. Goddamn, yeah, we were planning road trips all over the South for this thing. So they look around, you know, and they start organizing and setting this thing up, and the people who ensure the Knob Hill gun shootout, where people have actually died, before, yeah, kind of look and go, okay, wait a minute, we've got a problem here. We'll ensure Knob Hill gun shootout, or we'll ensure Survival Research Labs, but there is no way in hell that we are going to ensure you two people together in the same location the same weekend. Just not going to happen. And no one else would do it. They tried everyone. They even went to Lloyd's of London. Lloyd said, no.
Says they'll insure everyone.
Yeah, I think it's on the website that something there. It's they were planning on this back in '98, I think. And check the archives there. I think they've got the first refusal from Lloyd's of London refusing to insure something. If I remember correctly. Yeah, I'll let you play with that a little bit, but. It's probably a stupid question. Do we have any William Gibson fans here? Yeah, some of the short stories in Burning Chrome Collection, there's the one about the artist chick who becomes an AI, and one of the minor characters in that short story was the guy who went around and just picked up weird stuff that washed up on Tokyo Bay and built robots. Yeah, that was all based on Mark Pauline. And in Mona Lisa Overdrive, the guy who built the robots, that was also another Pauline reference there. William Gibson is very impressed with Mr. Pauline. He's truly a man who's dedicated to his work, because he kind of, every couple of years, will lose another part of his body building devices and working on things, mishaps. His first one was... in one of the earlier shows when they were first starting to do the rockets and blow things up with the rockets, he was trying to cut costs and make his own solid fuel. And he was following, following instructions that he'd gotten from one of his military defense department contacts. He was doing his old molds and casings and everything. And he didn't have access to all the ingredients, and he wasn't quite good enough a chemist at the time to realize that some of the ingredients he really should have used were stabilizers. So showtime is coming up. He's taking the cores out of the molds, and one of them gets stuck in a mold. Well, gets out the rubber mallet, starts very gently tapping, comes out a little bit more, gets stuck again. Holding this metal casing, one hand's got the mouth, the other. Just give it a good whack. When he regained consciousness a few minutes later on the other side of the workshop, the hand that had been holding the metal casing was fine, but the one that he had the mallet in, he pretty much didn't have a whole lot of skin or muscle on that hand and was missing a few fingers and his thumb. And they wound up, I believe, if I remember the article correctly, grafting his big toe onto his hand so he would have a thumb-like appendage. His hand is seriously screwed up. And if you check out the research books, anyone familiar with them, RE/search, there's one called Pranks. There's another one called Industrial Culture. I think they're both still in print. They've got extensive Mark Pauline interviews, articles, and they've got some pictures of him in. His right hand is really screwed up. I haven't had the honor of shaking it yet, but it's very interesting. He screwed up his leg a few years later in another mechanical mishap. He actually had a run-in with the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals at one point. He built a mechanical six-legged walking device that had a flamethrower on the front, and rather than controlling it remotely, he just kind of put like a little saddle with pressure plates on the top. and put his pet guinea pig, Stu, in the saddle. So Stu the guinea pig was controlling the six-legged robotic device with the flamethrower in front.
That's great.
And, yeah.
Think.
Pauline says in the interview, I don't understand why the SPCA was so upset. I mean, he was the most heavily armed creature in the show. And
robot wars are for pussies.
Yeah, it's like, it's not like we got him in there in the middle of all the other bots. He just kind of wandered around the edge randomly shooting stuff, and most of the time it wasn't at the audience, you know?
Most of the time.
Yeah, SRL shows, no one has died at one yet, but we're still hoping. And, let me give you an example of the mindset here. One of the tapes, they're doing a show, this was when they were still doing them in San Francisco, and they're out in some kind of big, I think it was like a high school football field or some other track or something like that, where they had a big paved area, but there was a highway overpass near one end of the performance area, and a bunch of people thought they would be clever, and they would just get on and watch from this overpass where they could see the entire show. So Pauline gets kind of ticked off about that, and they wheel around the catapult that's shooting the phosphor-covered bowling balls, flaming bowling balls, and start shooting at the people on the highway overpass to encourage them to clear off the overpass and buy a ticket. Yeah.
My exposure to Mark to Survival Research Laboratories is when they did a show in Phoenix, Arizona. I was the
I've got that tape.
I was the night manager for a industrial print shop at that time. I essentially fed the presses the paper, and the noise when they were setting up for the show would be this haunting, eerie that would just send chills up your spine. That was louder than the presses. And when the show began, I kind of wander out onto the dock. I light up a cigarette, and this line, because it was Goss. It was black-clad people lined up going into the Ice House, which used to be a place they threw raves in Phoenix. And there was lights and flashes and explosions coming in there, out of there. And later in the night, there was this just that shook the earth. And I decided, well, what the heck? I told my supervisor, look, the press supervisor, I'm going, you guys got all the paper you need. I just loaded it, put everything there. I'm walking out of here early, and I'm going across the street to find out what the heck that is. And it changed the way I perceived the world.
Yeah.
Politically and religiously.
That's amazing stuff. If any of y'all make it up to Freaknik, we've got a couple of TV channels in the hotel, ConTV basically, and I'll be running SRL videos pretty much nonstop the entire con. So,
Can you get them on DivX?
They're on tape right now, and I've got a laser disc, but I'm sure they could be converted. Although, cool. I would prefer that people support Pauline and buy the stuff. Okay. This is just like a taste, you know? But, they do travel now, so what the hell, I'll at least email the guy and ask what the requirements are for a traveling SRL show, and who knows, maybe they'll come to Atlanta at some point.
Dragon Con next year.
I'm the kind of person who's persistent and stupid enough to, instead of just paying money to fly out to the West Coast to see Pauline, to attempt to work and organize and bullshit for months to bring them out here. Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Definitely.
In South Africa, you can actually get your own moving Pauline machine. The incidence of violent crime there is so high that there are companies that make devices you attach to each side of the passenger side and the driver's side. And on command, flamethrowers.
Oh, you heard about that.
Yeah,
James Dean was... who was on the panel last night, was from South Africa. So, yeah, he has a bunch of stories to tell us about stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, marketsrl.org. Yeah.
There's a place in Africa that's essentially open diamond fields. And, if you're willing to kill or be killed,
oh, really?
You can go to these open diamond fields and just start collecting diamonds And within a couple of months, I mean, there's only one place they've set up that you can sell them once you've collected them. But once you've collected them, if you haven't been killed yet in the process, you're a millionaire. You know, go in, kill or be killed, and collect all the diamonds that you can.
What was this?
There's a place in Africa where there's open diamond fields. And get yourself a machine gun, go out, start collecting diamonds, camping, stake your claim. It's open season on these diamond, you know, fields. And you'll be a millionaire in a couple of months.
Robotic collecting device with a nuclear weapon on it, and a sign in several languages that says, if you fuck
Don't
this
fuck
with this
me.
Machine, it will blow up.
I do have a diamond field in Arkansas, but I don't think they have that many diamonds.
In large portions of Africa, it is actually illegal to possess diamonds, unless you're like you work for the diamond mine company. I mean, they've got such a monopoly on it. The De Beers mm-hmm. family is just ridiculously phenomenal.
Oh yeah, cavity searches going in and out from work. Making
I brush
people
regularly.
What's that?
I brush regularly.
That's essentially why they've set it up, that once you've gone out and run about this place and collected these diamonds, there's only one place that you can
cash
them in to get the money.
Dub beers.
All right, so I guess I've gotten you all enthusiastic about SRL, or at least you're tired of hearing me rant about it. Next question.
One way
gentleman in the back there.
Wait.
We have no topic.
Nothing is off topic.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something a bit off topic. 80211, do you see it going away, or what kinds of, given all the flaws in it, what kinds of ways do you see it staying around?
I'm sorry?
Wireless LAN, 80211B.
They'll fix the flaws. I mean, that's too useful a technology not to continue tinkering with it and plug the holes.
Or even having it installed at Dragon Con, like they do at DEF CON, or they did for the first time over the summer.
It was wild watching a bunch of people walk around with laptops sitting at the pool, and they all had network connectivity. It was very cool.
Anyone actually fall into the pool because they weren't paying attention where they were walking?
No, but it was kind of funny because some people had some non-functioning old, like, 486 laptops. You know, the LCD was busted on them, and they gutted them for the parts that they could use. And they were... These laptops were lying in the pool, and people were posing, standing in the pool, you know, looking like they're checking their email while the water from the fountain is splashing right down on the laptop. It was kind of amusing.
Cool. Yeah. Let's see if I can find like one of those.
But
green
hats. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I've been at Freaknik since Freaknik 2 and
cool.
AtlantiCon this past year. I know these guys spend a good deal of time and money, you know, wiring the hotel so people can have, you know, network connectivity and be able to go in there and say, here, just bring your own wireless LAN part and connect to the network anywhere in the hotel. That's very cool. And
that's one of the things we're trying to do for Freaknik this year. And I'm actually kind of surprised because I'm giving anyone of a
that's the first word.
Giving
wow,
anyone of
a polyphonic cell phone ring.
Giving anyone of an entrepreneurial bent here an opportunity to make some money and come in and just bring a bunch, you know, in exchange for loaning us some switches for wired stuff and some wireless hubs, basically sell whatever they want.
Yeah.
Yeah, cabling, cards, wireless
Absolutely.
Cards, hubs, whatever. No one stepped up for that, so I guess I got to ratchet up the
ratchet
publicity
up the
and the hype and the begging a little bit more. Free con. I have no money. No. I don't rent stuff. I swap favors.
What was it in particular that you were looking for Freaknik, these switches? Or?
We want switches, about half a dozen 24-port switches just for the networking stuff. Freaknik has gotten to the point where it's too large for us to guarantee an internet connection to everybody's hotel room on demand, so I'm trying to change it a little bit and at least provide the switches and say, all right, you know, if you want network access in your hotel room,
You bring your own cable and crimpers and ends, and you bring the cable to us, and we'll plug you in and give you an IP address. We don't have time to run the wiring anymore. If you want to do wireless, we've got some wireless hubs. And if you don't want to bring all that stuff with you, if you're not sure how to do it, we've got people on site who will sell you the equipment cheap, and we'll have workshops every day on how to set this stuff up and how to run it. Figure that would be good, especially for the newbies, to learn how to cable or how to do wireless. In exchange, anyone who would loan us the switches and the wireless hubs gets free run of the con, gets free advertising, and I'm not asking for a cut of whatever they make off of it. So, you know, it's a good chance for someone to make some money.
I'll talk to my father.
Pardon?
I'll talk to my father. He's in the business.
Great.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
That's what he was asking for.
Oh,
I got an old 10-base-2 switch if you want to use it.
No. anyone here got
I got Tolkien Ring.
Anyone here got... I've got ArcNet.
Yeah, I got a bunch of Broken Ring and 10-base fiber.
Anyone here got an in with a Gem... was it Gem Plus, the smart card people? Anyone? We had a guy who wanted to do... found out about Freaknik a little bit too late last year, and he was going to provide badges this year, which were going to be smart cards. And let him do a panel and some interesting demonstrations on exactly how invasive this technology could be and, like, track selected people in real time by their badges, stuff like that. But apparently he got his ass canned last week, and all of a sudden I got to come up with badges somehow, something cool.
Badgers?
I want to do something better.
Badges?
I want to do something better than laminates. If anyone's got an idea for badges that are better than simple laminates, let me know. What? Well, you see, here's the problem, though. It's got to be something
cheap.
Yeah, as cheap as possible, or better yet, trading favors or donation for access to, you know, full access to the con.
2 years ago, they were little printed circuit boards minus the components. That was kind of
cool. Yeah, we had kind of an unofficial contest to see who could be the most creative with their board, and we had a guy who actually hooked up some LED displays to it and was had simple messages going across his board. That was fun.
They had last year, we were trying to get CD business cards, trying to get a good price on those, you know, the little 3-inch CDs that are cut to the shape of a...
fantastic price on them. It's just the guy who was supposed to master the ISO image crapped out on me like 2 weeks before the con. Yeah,
just go to a used computer supply store where you can walk into the bins where they've got nothing but cards, all you know, whatever you can carry for $12, and, you know, use old network cards as the badges and stuff like that.
That would be cool with a piece of Cat 5.
Yeah, but unfortunately, considering the clientele of the convention, most people will probably have those lying around anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, trying
make
to
your
silk,
own card.
Trying to silk screen a whole bunch of cards would be a royal pain in the ass, although I guess a stencil and spray paint. But, you know, I want to do something a little bit nicer than that. People, when they come to HackerCons, they want three things. They want a T-shirt, they want a neat program guide schedule thing, and they want a badge. I can handle the program guide and the T-shirts, but the badge is screwing me up this year.
Did you see the DEF CON badges from this year?
I haven't seen one yet.
They were weird. It was like this plastic pouch. It was almost, it was like this plastic pouch filled with oil, two different types of oil. It was like, for the standard con attendees, it was yellow oil, and then they had red oil in there. It looked like this sack filled with, like, blood.
Damn those capitalist hacker conventions making a profit and having an actual operating budget. How
dare
they?
I'm looking at this thing. I'm thinking, where the hell did they go to get this thing designed, first of all? And how do you describe it? I want to have this gel-filled... What's that? You know the con... Have you seen the DEF CON badges from this year?
So how do you know about this?
Because they're very popular in fifth grade at my school.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Maybe it's like this new fad among young children that I don't know
maybe
about.
Maybe we could have badges made from Pokemon cards.
There we go. I've got plenty of those. I have a stepson who was into the Pokemon phase.
We're going to tie you up later and hopefully never see you again after that one.
Let me tell you my... Let me tell you about my other idea to get Ms. Marvel or Danger Woman or whatever her name is this year to come to Freaknik 5.
You want
to
tag Marvel?
Well, we are going to be involving her more in DragonCon next year. I hooked up with the local subgenius clinch, and now that DragonCon isn't the same weekend anymore as X-Day, There should be a much stronger subgenius presence at Dragon Con in the coming years, and since I'm going to be living here now. Well, yeah, I'm a Discordian Pope, too. I cover all my bases, man. This is why I've got 27 different mail order ministries. I figure, you know, I got to be right somewhere.
I'm just waiting for you to program a bot that goes out and looks for ones you haven't registered on.
I don't even remember what I'm ordained
Let's
in.
Start
anymore.
Our own ordination for 2600. He can automatically, so can I.
Well, you can still have to go to the state to get the permit to do the marials and burials.
Marials? Is that a word?
I haven't done a burial, but I've done three weddings so far, and pretty much all you need for Tennessee and Georgia is just, you know, put your name in. Yeah.
Well, marry
isn't
and
the
bury,
first
you know.
Isn't the First Amendment wonderful, you know, freedom of religion.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's essentially the two type, the two the you know.
There you go.
The few things that a minister does, marry and bury.
Well, you know, I want to get in on that circumcision action, too. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Only if you practice on yourself first.
Nah.
Too late.
Doctors should never operate on themselves.
This is true.
Well, gee, that really killed the conversation.
Yeah.
All the guys are crossing their legs and looking uncomfortable there. Mm. All right. Maybe we could offer that something, yeah, just work that somehow into the pranks panel next year. Work the medical angle.
Circumcision 101 or something like that?
Oh, goddamn, we got to do this. This works a couple times when we're at the radio station. We have, you know, we do the public service announcements, and we always had a lot of fun with those because we would never be serious about them. And, of course, my favorite was the one for breast exams. And we made a point of regularly offering free breast exams on the air to, you know, women only, please. And, you know, got to be at least 18. Anyone who came in and wanted a breast exam and, you know, no, we're not doctors. We don't even play them on TV. We're just concerned about your breasts. So, you know, ladies, come on down and
make sure they're,
help you out.
They're doing
and,
okay.
I've actually performed three live on-air breast exams in the last couple of years. And I think we should offer those at Dragon Con as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think especially like Friday and Saturday night when some of the S&M exhibitionists goths get really liquored up. You know, we may have a line. You don't know. I mean, yeah.
Well, considering that
all we got to do is mention Hugme's name and free breast exams, and I think we'll be in.
Yeah, considering that guy in the costume contest last night with that big dildo, I think he'd probably pull it off.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's I remember it's somewhere in the 30 or like 30 something. Your 30-somethingth person had, came out on stage with his cape closed up. He swung it on this big, like, 18 inches to 2 feet green dildo-looking thing strapped to his crotch, sticking out. And it lit up, and it glowed.
Ooh.
It was really fucked
Radioactive.
Up.
Radioactive.
He's had sex on top of a nuclear reactor, too.
That sounds more like a medical emergency than a dildo.
Yes. New topic. Not that there is one, but...
Did you say nude topic?
Nude topic. Ba-doom-tsh.
Since we're kind of hard up for a topic here.
Nudists for... Wait a minute. Nudists for Christ. We could be nudists for Christ next year.
There we go.
Did anybody see the guys on the second floor last night? Jesus loves you.
Jeebus. No, they altered the sign to say Jeebus.
Oh, did they? Cool.
There are Jeebus. Christian nudist organizations.
Funniest bumper right. sticker I've seen in a long time
just
says
in,
funniest bumper sticker I've seen in a long time says Jesus loves you, and in small letters underneath it says everyone else thinks you're an asshole.
Oh, here's a good one. I didn't have a chance to use it on these people because I actually went up to them in my minister outfit and asked them, and I figure if I was, you know, initiating contact, I wouldn't be an asshole, but if they'd come up to me, this has worked in the past before. Someone comes up and just announces, you know, Jesus loves you, and you get a really concerned, angry look on your face and go, okay, look, I don't know how you found out about that, but we were both drunk, it only happened once, I haven't seen him since, and I am not gay, so just leave me the hell alone. And turn around and walk off. Okay. Your question?
All right, my question is mainly for Laughing Boy here. It's I was at your Ghost Hunting 101 panel, and I didn't get a chance to go to 201.
Right.
So I was wondering,
I had heard from a friend of mine, I'm not sure, that you could retrofit something onto a conventional video camera that could allow you to record the infrared spectrum and the heat.
Oh, yes, for looking through people's clothing.
I've heard about that, the night shot modification. Right. But I'm mainly referring to, like you said, that the infrared camera was $25,000.
Oh, thermal imaging camera.
Thermal imaging is what I mean.
Thermography camera. They're pricey toys. Brand new. Wait. You can find them used. I've seen them for about $2,000.
There was an article in a recent issue of Nuts and Bolts on how to build your own for something like $1,000, maybe cheaper.
What issue?
I don't know, but since I've got every issue for the last 10 or 12 years, I'll look when I get home and I'll email you.
They give me the occasional promotional copy, free copy.
It was an issue within... They keep sending me free issues, and I don't know why, but I'm not going to object. You know?
I was going to advertise in there like 10 years ago, and I got on their mailing list, and
Within the last 6 months had an article.
Damn.
So I'll find
your own thermography camera. Fucking A. I wonder if it's on their website.
I had heard that you could retrofit something onto a fairly standard regular video camera and you could produce the same images.
I don't know about that. I personally, my thought is because I did ask about that, I posted to some Usenet news group. I think it was digital imaging or something like that. And I asked them. I said, what would it take to make your own thermography camera? And a couple people posted back about $20,000 and lots of spare time. And I was like, okay, that's not the answer I was looking for, and I never really pursued it after that. But if you have any links and stuff and try and find that issue for me.
So I hear a rumor that I didn't know you were doing the ghost hunting panels, that guys in Ghostbuster costumes kept sticking their heads in the door and ticking you off.
I missed that. No, I didn't see them. I saw the Ghostbusters guys in the lobby, but no, I'd have told them to come on in. In fact, I joked to the panel. I said my proton pack is in the shop. Otherwise, I'd have that here with me too. They didn't piss me off. I didn't see anybody doing that during my panel. Who'd you hear that from?
I don't know. I was drinking heavily at one of these other panels, and someone mentioned it. So,
my slightly more off-topic follow-up would be if you saw anything at the Old Lawrenceville Cemetery and what your volunteers found.
We got some interesting videotape. Unfortunately, none of our cameras came back. I gave all the film to Eckerd's and said, okay, print all these photos to CD. And unfortunately, since we were snapping pictures in a cemetery, they were apparently too dark for their slide or their film scanner to scan any images. So we didn't have any photographs to go to pour over. But I had about 20 minutes worth of videotape with some strange lights and stuff moving around. And we reviewed that last night. So yes, in addition to playing with lasers, I'm also an amateur paranormal investigator, sort of.
Ever build fake UFOs?
Ever build fake UFOs? No, but that would be kind of cool to fly one of those things over I-85 at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon and stall traffic.
We'll get to you in a second here.
How about getting a copy of the Lemageddon and actually doing a summoning of a goetic spirit and getting that on film?
Doing what? I'm sorry?
The Seals of Solomon, and actually doing a demon summoning and, getting that on.
I try to...
Would anyone notice at Dragon Con?
I try to go about this from a scientific standpoint. And
have a beer.
go about it from a scientific standpoint to actually see if it's possible. And
I don't know. Demonology, some of that stuff kind of frightens me. I have enough screwed up in my life right now. I don't need to invite anything else to come fuck with me.
You mentioned UFO. I'll tell you a quick way to get a bunch of sightings. Quick way to get a bunch of sightings. Cheap, easy. Take a styrofoam cup and a small candle. Fill a styrofoam cup halfway with sand. Put the candle in. Get a garment bag like you get from the dry cleaners. Seal it with tape. Put some string. Dental floss works really well. Tape it up.
Fill it with
helium.
Set
it off on a Friday evening or a Saturday evening in a fairly small town, when a lot of people are going to be out drinking.
usually been there, done it.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I've done it too. You'll get they'll get newspaper reports.
Was it filled with? It's filled with helium, and you just let it.
No, hot air.
Oh, what I thought would always be really cool would be to like generate like a whole bunch of hydrogen and like let it fill up like a trash bag, like a hefty bag. Tie the bag off using a piece of, you know, like a 5 foot length of fuse. Light the fuse, let it go up, and let, you know, yeah, big explosion in the air. Hydrogen is fun, and it's cheap. It's easy to make. Or a piece of aluminum foil in liquid plumber.
Talking about other horrible hacks and weird things, just in general.
Yes, completely.
I've got a friend, goes by the name of Kaz. Every so often he'll take pickles and he'll run electricity through them.
Pickles?
Yes, pickles.
Electric pickles.
Yes.
Dill?
Yeah, big kosher dill pickles, and he'll just run electricity through them. And it's interesting to see this pickle just go completely white. Is there anything else, like, just silly, silly things that you can do with household electricity?
With
or?
You can generate the electricity with a potato.
You can generate electricity with a potato.
Or beer.
But yeah, you can do that with that kind of stuff. But, I mean, we're not talking about generating electricity. We're talking about playing with it.
I don't see why not. You're just putting a zinc rod and a copper rod in the beer. You don't get much voltage enough to, you know, maybe run an LCD, but...
As long as it doesn't do anything to the taste. Or the alcohol.
There you go. Yeah.
Vitamins and minerals.
Minerals.
I just like creating art. Beer is
good food, see?
I love creating art with AOL CDs and a microwave.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I haven't had the guts to do that yet, but they do all sorts of strange things, I hear, when you stick them in a microwave.
Another real weird one to put in a microwave is the little Klondike bags. Put them on for about 5 seconds, and they zzz, and the microwave goes nice and blue. The inside of the microwave goes nice and blue.
Marshmallow Pete.
Yeah, you do destroy the microwave by that point, but hey, you don't actually use your own.
Marshmallow Peeps, I like them because they swell up like Akira.
Oh, speaking of microwave tricks, if you take a generic Pop-Tart wrapper, the ones that use foil, like one brand name's Toastettes, put in there for a second and a half, and you've got a nice light for your cigarette. You're like a little flame going, shh.
Flaming Pop-Tarts.
I've never seen it catch fire. I've seen it, like, spark nicely, but, you know, I've never seen it catch fire.
You turn it off too soon.
Speaking of weird stuff, anybody seen the Marshmallow Bunny Survival Tests website?
Oh, yeah.
What the world is this?
It's weird. This guy, he tortures marshmallow bunnies and peeps. There's a sequel site to it, The Peeps Strike Back or something like that. It's like some people have entirely too much time on their hands.
Is there anything else like that where people have too much
Lego
time?
Lego porn?
Oh, yeah. Lego porn.
The site with Lego porn. I wish I had these links, too. Furniture porn.
I love furniture porn.
Barbie porn, that's cool. I could see that. Okay, it's time to wrap. What are we talking about?
For the microphones, people.
I got the bunny.
Oh, do you? What's there? It is. There it is.
Just grab Bob and go bang on the door. He should be up in the room.
It's 11:35. We have to wrap now. So.
Actually, we don't really have to because Nimrod and Fuller aren't even here, and I'm about the only participant, and they're basically... Oh, there you are.
Never mind.
Okay. Turn around.
And thank you for attending Hacking 301. You are the few, the proud, the survivors. The hungover.
Go now and go upon the world and procreate.
Actually, not hungover so much as just liking sleep is more.
Always. Bring an email address. What do you want to do?
You've met him once.
No, Kenneth.
Nashville, Tennessee.